Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Good evening and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Hugs from Heaven and can be found on the web at www.hugsfromheaven.com, and Hugs is spelled H-U-G-Z. Tonight's guest is Dr. Barry Taff, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, and I hope everybody out there has survived the holiday looking forward to the new year. You know, in looking over some of the stories that were in the paper, one that really got me about these shopping malls, you know, there was an article about, remember those sneakers, Air Jordans?
Yeah.
Evidently the company was putting out a retro version of it, and of course, you know, just before Christmas. So you had all the way from the state of Washington, you know, in Seattle, throughout the southern part of the country to the east, there were near riots in malls. In Washington state, and Georgia, there was violence. Police were using pepper spray. There was fighting. There was pushing. There was a stabbing. There were gunshots. When you think about it, it's Christmas.
That it's Christmas, what happens to human dignity?
But it's done, and it was so ironic. I mean, it's done in the, supposedly, if you interview these people, well, they want to buy something for somebody, well, they need to get this for Christmas. I mean, it's the whole point of these holidays is so absurd at this point where, you know, the true meaning of the holiday is totally lost. I mean, we talk about
you thank TV, marketers, and lawyers, and we got ourselves into a really great mess here.
I got you a gift for the holiday. Of course, I had to rob and stab two people, but I got it.
I hope you like it, because I'm going to jail after this.
Right. I see you have an article on your desk about a chimp.
I just pulled it out because I was kind of amused by this. And some people will remember a TV show, and before that, movies called Tarzan.
Yeah, of course.
And Tarzan and Jane lived in the jungle, and they had their cheetah, their chimp, their faithful chimp, who took part in all their little scenarios of what they did out in the wilderness. And Tarzan was played by Johnny Weissmuller, and Jane was Maureen O'Sullivan, for those people who want to reflect back. Quite interesting, though, the article is about the chimp having just died. So that kind of caught my eye, because I figured, well, I don't know if Johnny Weissmuller or Maureen O'Sullivan, if either of them are still around, I doubt it.
Well, they're not.
The movie was from the 30s and the 40s.
Yeah. Chimps live a long time, evidently.
Apparently they do. And so what happened was once somebody made claim to the fact that they had the deceased cheetah, a bunch of other people came out of the woodwork claiming, no, they had the deceased cheetah. So I kind of thought,
the deceased cheetah, that cheetah was the name of the
cheetah. Cheetah was the name of the
right,
cheetah.
Not a cheetah.
Oh, no, I
okay.
Yeah, cheetah was the name of the chimp.
Right.
And apparently, if you do the math, then this particular chimp that they're claiming was Cheetah would be 80 years old. Now, they do live a long time, but historically, this article points out that they are not aware of any chimp living to be 80.
Yeah, I thought they could live to, 30, 40 years,
No, well, they some people have claimed here that they've got a chimp that lived to 73.
Wow.
So it is, I guess it is possible, but they say because of some sort of a fire that all the records of what happened with the original monkey that played Cheetah are gone, and so there's no way to substantiate anybody's claims on this.
Yeah, and another case where the animal in the show outlives the actors, by quite some time.
Right. So since we know that we have animals in the afterlife, maybe may the real Cheetah stand up and contact
Let
one
us
of
know.
The mediums.
One thing I wanted to discuss with you and get your opinion on was, and I'll tell you afterwards what the research shows, but we talk a lot about people that have these precognitive moments, when they catch a glimpse of the future. And would you say overall that most precognitive pieces of information that we get are things that are going to happen that are bad or that are good? It come to you in a dream or in some sort of meditative state. But
I don't want to go ahead and say, it's 50-50, but I don't think it's particular to one way or the other.
That's what I always thought, and that's something that we can certainly ask our guest when he comes on. But the research seems to show that overwhelmingly precognitive things are of the nature of what we would consider to be bad things.
Maybe that's
crashes, accidents, dire situations, sometimes, they're used, people are able to avoid these situations by heeding, their...
Well, then maybe it's the same thing as you see human nature-wise. If people are having a bad day, they're going to talk to you about all the terrible things that happen. Nobody ever comes up to you and says, or I should say few people would come up to you and say, I had a wonderful day today, or I've had a wonderful week, or I had a wonderful month, or a wonderful year. Nobody looks at the positive side of things. It's become human nature to whine and complain about things. That's what your topic is. The news on the TV and on the radio is all about negative stuff. Occasionally they'll throw in something that's positive.
We just don't hear about
that. We don't hear about it.
Yeah, well, that's true. And when you think about it, think back when you have all these disasters that happen, and then afterwards a lot of people, it comes out psychics who claim that they... predicted this, they had these precognitive moments, and it always seems to be about, plane crashes and volcanoes and earthquakes and all things of that nature, but they don't come out and say, I dreamt about somebody hitting the lottery or somebody doing a good deed or having a beautiful day. You're right. So that stuff doesn't sell, so to speak. So
right.
you just don't hear about it. But it is true that the media is overwhelmingly, bent towards the negative, than the positive. Sometimes I watch the news and I do a little mental tick off of the items, and it's not until you get to item, if you get to one at all, they go through 10 or 12 news items, and then maybe the 13th or 14th is something that could be, positive in nature, So... And that's, I understand why, if that's because that people seem to be more interested and it makes for more viewers.
It's a sad sad statement, though. I mean, you think about it when you're driving on the highway, right, and there's an accident. It doesn't matter how minor or major, everybody's got to stop and look.
So you think that's why horror movies are so... so popular, people, they want to be scared, they want to see the gore, it's somehow, on some level, it's thrilling, I never could figure it out.
Right, and it's all part of the statistics and marketing and what sells, and that's what drives this culture that we're in that is such a negative culture. It's all because of that.
And, of course, this time of the year, though, if you've noticed, you see a lot more of these positive stories of people going out. I mean, I read a story today about two women. They met each other at a party. One woman was deathly sick. She needed desperately needed a new kidney. And the other woman, who just met her then, and something told her that, you know, that she needs to donate a kidney to this woman and save her life, and that she would be a match, and that's what turned out. And she got herself tested. She was the right blood type, and she gave her the kidney and, you know, saved this woman's life. So you do see stories like that coming now because we associate this time of the year with good, you know, good
right.
deeds.
But I'm sure many kidneys were donated the other 11 months of the year.
Right, and we didn't hear about it.
You don't hear about it because they have to play to the audience.
Right.
They have to play to what it is, and that's a sorry state of where we are.
Well, let's take our break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Dr. Barry Taff, who's world-renowned, if you want to know about the paranormal. So stay with us, and when we come back, we will be have a guest join us. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Barry Taff. Our sponsor is Hugs from Heaven and can be found on the web at www.hugsfromheaven.com. And Hugs is spelled H-U-G-Z. Bob?
And our guest tonight is Dr. Barry Taff. Dr. Taff holds a doctorate in psychophysiology with a minor in biomedical engineering. He's a world-renowned parapsychologist. He worked out of the UCLA's former parapsychology lab from 69 to 78 as a research associate. And during his 43-year career, Dr. Taff has investigated more than 4,500 cases of ghosts, hauntings, poltergeist, and he's conducted extensive studies in telepathy and precognition, and that incidentally led to the development of the initial protocols and methodologies for what we now know as remote viewing. He was also himself investigated as a psychic subject in 1969. He's appeared on numerous TV and radio programs. He's consulted for the government, for business, law enforcement agencies. He served as a technical advisor or script doctor for the films Logan's Run, Demon Seed, Altered States, Poltergeist, and The Entity. His book is called Aliens Above, Ghosts Below, Explorations of the Unknown. Welcome, Dr. Taff.
No, thank you. You know, you're the first person to cite my credential correctly. Everyone either says something that doesn't even relate to what they're reading. After a year and a half of doing these interviews, you're the only one that got it right.
Oh, thank you. Well, you deserve it.
No, thanks.
The thing that strikes me is you've certainly had an extraordinary career, and with extraordinary phenomena that seem to happen around you. So my first reaction in reading about some of your past investigations of psi phenomena was, boy, if there ever was an example of the experimenter effect, here it is. I mean,
yeah.
Did you begin to believe that, I mean, due to your own psychic abilities, that you were the common denominator, you were the source of
the... my growing up, okay, what got me into the field were two different aspects. One is simple scientific curiosity. But what really drew me in were my experiences growing up as a child, and I was having these telepathic, clairvoyant, precognitive episodes on a regular basis, yet my friends and family were not. So why me? The question is, am I nuts? Everyone else isn't. Is everyone else, you know, nuts and I'm not? Is somewhere in the middle? What's going on and why? And an example, when I was 10 years old in the fifth grade, during recess, I'm playing in the courtyard, and a little blonde girl named Christine's walking towards me. And I knew who she was. I know her. She's a friend. And I'm looking at her, and the best way to describe this is like a color x-ray coming on. And I looked, and I go, what's that? So I see a plastic bag under her dress and a tube going into her side. I didn't know what the word colostomy was. I'm 10 years old. So I went up to her. I said, what's that plastic bag and tube going into your body? And she freaked out, got the teacher. They dragged me in the principal's office. They said, did you look under her dress? Or did you sneak in the girl's bathroom? I said, I did neither. I just looked at her, and it came on. He goes, what do you mean it came on? I said, you know, like x-ray vision. And they went, what? So I said to the principal, I said, well, you've got that appendix scar that's never healed properly. It's always inflamed. It's always red. And he turned a couple shades of purple, and then he called my parents. They said, what is he? And they said, don't ask. And so that was... These things were very normal to me. I assumed everyone had them, and they very well may, but they're not aware of them.
Right.
And so I met Dr. Thelma Moss, early 69.
Uh-huh.
I wrote her. She didn't respond earlier. I wrote, called. She never replied. I knew one of her graduate students when I was in college, and I met her. And so she lived very close to me. And I sat down on her couch. She was talking about my experiences, and she threw me her keys and said, what do you feel? And so I'm describing things, and I said, I see a fat blonde woman with blue eyes named Shelley, really obnoxious, got a loud voice, very boisterous, and her best friend was Shelley Winters, and that certainly described Shelley Winters.
Right.
Not flatteringly so, but it did.
Yeah.
And, right. So she did a study on me, which was published in a medical journal in 1974-75. Okay, so you're psychic, but why you, why not everyone else around you? And this led to, can you take people and train them to develop this? If, in other words, if they have an inherent capacity or ability, can you train them? And the lab work was in that. And we used standard methods of positive feedback, the learning paradigm of positive feedback and reinforcement. And we did have a tremendous level of success. And it was amazing because the things we learned totally shattered our myths, what was believed about the phenomena, that this is not this, whatever you want to call it, telepathy, precognition, clairvoyance, it's accessing information remotely from yourself. Mm. And the question is, it doesn't appear to be a wave or a particle or a field as we know it. There appears to be a different type of information and energy out there which we can access. And it doesn't know time. It doesn't know space. And if you can access this, you can see the past, you can see the future, you can see things in distance and access things deeply buried in people's minds. The question is how and why. The only model that came up after all the work we did was one of a hologram. If you have a normal 8x10 of someone, and if you have an 8x10 hologram, if you cut the 8x10 photograph, you get a piece of it. If you cut the hologram, each piece will recreate the whole because the information is equally distributed. And the evidence suggests our brains work like this. Consciousness might work like this. Space-time might work like this. And the evidence suggests the paranormal very likely works like this, which means that the past information still exists. The future's information already exists. And whether you're looking at someone next door with your mind or looking at someone on the other side of the planet, it's all the same. It's a question of focus, and we ran into this on a regular basis, and so we filed grant applications with government agencies. They were very interested for the lab work, but UCLA and the Neuropsychiatric Institute, where we have the lab, would not get involved because it was political suicide, even back in the early 70s.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Yeah, yeah, we were visited by Office of Naval Intelligence and DARPA and CIA and NSA and all these groups and demonstrated, and they wanted to work with us because after they saw what we were doing, but UCLA went no. So it left us and it went up to Stanford Research Institute in Menlo Park, and right. It was remote viewing, and the work is amazing because when it works, it works.
Yeah.
So that was the lab work, and my book gets into this just a little bit. We got very tired of doing the real-time stuff because it was boring. Been there, done that. So we decided, actually, I guess it was like 1978, to do our first precognitive remote viewing. So the last session of one of our groups was, you know, we progressive muscular relaxation. It's a sensory-deprived environment. Everyone's got headphones on and a microphone. It's what you're saying is being recorded. We can't hear each other. And we just, okay, describe the target that's going to be randomly chosen on the next session a week later. And we're all rattling off information. We see a tall blonde woman, blue eyes. We describe her clothing. She's seated in one chair in the room, all of which had numbers underneath them on their base. And we describe the three-story home in the Hollywood Hills and a baby grand piano. And then we start describing a tall man dressed in black, black shirt, black pants, black boots, black gloves, black belt, black hat, black mask, black cape, and an imposing sword. And we thought we were losing our minds. We forgot about it. The next week, new people came in. We gave each of them a sealed envelope with a number in it. They sat down. We rolled dice, opened up your packets. Whatever number corresponds to the rolled dice, you're the target. Here's the tape we made last week. Listen to the tape. Anything we say that's relevant to you, stop it. So she's playing the tape back, and we described her perfectly. The clothing, her height, her hair, her face, even the chair she randomly chose to sit in. Okay, the house fit, the piano fit, but that could be coincidence. Then we finally get to the point of a tall man all in black, as I just described, and she went pale. She went, "Do you know who I am?" And we went, "No, who are you?" She said, "I'm Tony Williams." I go, "Who's Tony Williams?" "My father's Guy Williams." And we went, "My," and she, her father played Zorro for Disney.
Yeah.
And she said, "Wait, when did you make this tape?" We said, "A week ago." A week ago, she goes, "I didn't know I was coming until 3 hours ago."
Mm.
So, again, where does one draw a line? It was fascinating, and she got very unnerved by this. And, you know, I said, look, you know, and some of the regulars in our research group got a little unnerved by it, even more so than she did. We tried it again a few weeks later, and all we kept seeing was fire, 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 fire. Okay, nothing. We thought we were losing our mind. We smelled it. We could see it in our mind's eye. The next day, I'm up in the lab. Fire engines come to the campus, to the NPI. We're working. That room caught fire. A socket behind the drapes in the room started shorting. It caught the drapes on fire. The room was burning. No wonder why we thought it was imminent.
Yeah.
So some of our members dropped out at that point. They go, I don't like this anymore. It's not fun. I said, but we're being shown something. We're learning. No, I don't like this. I don't want to deal with this. And you know, we kept doing the groups until about 86 privately, and it was again. It's discussed in my book, but the work that really got my interest going was the field research, the investigating cases of poltergeists and hauntings and apparitions and doppelgangers and. It's like betting on the lottery. Most of the time, nothing happens. But once in a great while, you're in the right place at the right time. Something happens. You're there to experience it and to document it.
Yeah. Well, it seems like you were in the right place at the right time a lot, unlike a lot of other...
I've been doing this 43 years, and, if you do something long enough...
Yeah.
But your comment opening the conversation was very relevant, the experimenter's effect, observer's effect. Some people act as sheep, others act as goats. Sheep seem to be amplifiers or conduits or boosters, for lack of a better term, while others seem to act as dampeners. And maybe if one is sensitive to this in some way, their presence facilitates it.
Mm-hmm.
But, 99% of my cases, you go out, you interview the people, you take measurements of the environment and the people, you ask a lot of intrusive, invasive questions about their psychological background, their medical background, what the background of the house, location, their paranormal background, if any, and you leave. But once in a great while, things do happen. And that's what makes up for all the other boring time. But also, I had the pleasure or displeasure of meeting a lot of poltergeist agents just during the course of my work over time. Girls I've dated, friends I've met, and some I described this in the first section of my book. One's called Life Poltergeist Agents, and the chapter is Poltergeist Agents Revisited.
Right.
And I'm very skeptical. So when you see it happen in front of you, and it's in an environment that's neutral, that doesn't belong to me or them, it's like in a restaurant or something, that's pretty astounding. And then you go, well, what's going on and why? And the patterns are pretty consistent, what we've seen over the years, in terms of the people who manifest these types of events.
Mm. So when you go out on an investigation, and I know a lot of people are used to watching these TV shows, and these so-called investigators have a backpacks full of various equipment. The equipment they would lead you to believe was designed to detect ghosts, but that's not the case. I assume that you're using the equipment really to rule out environmental issues rather than to detect ghosts.
Well, since we don't know what a ghost is, how can you measure it?
Right.
You can't measure what you don't know. The good analogy here would be you're seeing a wake produced in the water, but you can't see the boat.
Mm.
We're measuring the effect of an unknown cause. We measure electromagnetic, we measure ionic, we measure geomagnetic, electrostatic, thermal. We have low frequency spectrum analyzers, full spectrum cameras. And the patterns we're seeing demonstrate a high degree of continuity in that these, for the most part, these environments have either geomagnetic or electromagnetic anomalies. And a high percentage of the people who are plagued with these recurring events are either seizure-prone or epileptic. When they take the meds to quell the seizures, not only do the seizures stop, but so does the phenomenon.
Right. Now, you mentioned before, poltergeist agents and... Mm-hmm. Some of our listeners may not be familiar with that term. So what is a poltergeist?
A poltergeist agent is usually a person from anywhere from a childhood into an adolescence or even a young adulthood that seems to have a predilection for these phenomena being around them. They're a generator. The belief, the word poltergeist is German for noisy ghost or noisy spirit, and that was, our ancestors' belief. Well, now we know these people may actually be the cause of it.
Right.
Instead of, psychogenic illness where your stress tears your body apart, this energy is externalized in some way and it tears the environment apart.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing is that we measure people as well as the environment with instruments. Measuring bioelectric fields is very easy. Measuring biomagnetics is almost impossible unless you're in a lab with superconducting sensors, which aren't portable. However, around poltergeist agents, for the most part, their bodies are putting out over a million times the magnetic field of a normal person. And why? That's why they have seizures, why they're seizure prone, or, you know, why they're epileptic.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. So the thing is, their bodies are acting like amplifiers, waveguides, and focal planes. Their bodies are absorbing information and energy in the environment, reprocessing it, and then re-emitting it and directing it.
Now, you've done approximately 4,500 investigations, and I think you mentioned in a book that in about 90% of these cases, I mean, you were able to attribute the phenomena to a PK source. I mean,
Right. Once, you know, in science, something called Occam's razor, all things being equal, go with the simplest explanation.
Right.
And most of the time, you know, we don't. There's not enough information to reach any conclusion. But if we reach the point now where between interviewing the people and measuring the people and the environment and looking at the histories of all concerned, the pattern seems to be the same. It seems to be a confluence. It's like location, location, location. You have the person with very uniquely wired neurology and very unstable emotions. Those three events linked together produces psychokinetic or recurrent spontaneous psychokinetic manifestations. And the patterns are clear, looking at the types of phenomena that goes on and what it does and how it displays itself around people. It's very obvious. I mean, I write, this is in chapter two of my book, The Real Identity Case, chapter three, A Hazardous Haunting Case, and in many other cases. If you pull back far enough and look at the case as a whole, not one little part of it, all the events seem to make sense. And we've come to the point now where I think we could reverse engineer the phenomena rather than waiting for it to occur like a bunch of clowns sitting there scratching our heads. After all said and done, we could play with the environment electromagnetically and drive or trigger the events to occur. But that might endanger the health of all present, you know, physical and mental health of the old. So you'd never do that because you never put people at risk under
right.
any circumstance. So we can't. But I think it can be done.
Yeah. Well, what about the other situations and investigations you're involved in when there is no apparent poltergeist agent and still the phenomena exists? I mean, do you suspect a discarnate intelligence?
Well, I've only had maybe one or two cases in my background that even subtly suggest that. One occurred in 1970. I think this is in Chapter 1. Where I almost was killed, and it's a very lengthy story, but long and short, a couple that lived in near Inglewood were violently killed in an auto accident. The neighbors didn't know they were dead, and they saw them taking out the trash and mowing the lawn, but they were dead for weeks. So we got called out to the house by the grandchildren of these people, and it was amazing. While in the house, we see someone walks in, he starts attacking me. And I tried to fight him off. I couldn't. He threw me in the bathtub and strangling me. An older man, probably in his late 60s or early 70s, white hair, very stocky, and he's yelling, "Get out of my house, get out." And it took five other men to pull him off and beat him to the floor. And we get up, and we see this elderly man just fade away, and there's the grandson of us, the house, the much younger man, and he was almost unconscious. He was hurt. And we brought him. Got up, and he was sort of staggering and stunned, and we told him what happened, and he pulled a picture out of his dead grandfather who used to live in the house, and that was the man we saw attack me. But we didn't even know what the man looked like at the time.
Yeah.
But the women who didn't come to my aid, they saw the grandson attack me. The man who came to my aid saw the elderly gentleman attack me. So
yeah.
What was that? I mean, logically, what does that suggest? That some kind of continuation of consciousness.
Yeah, and as I recall in that episode, I mean, you actually watched this person that was attacking you, dissolve and metamorphize.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
They beat him off, they pulled him off, they beat him in the floor,
yeah.
We get up, and he just, it's like a movie, like a slow dissolve, like zoom. And what's there on the floor, stunned and beaten, is the grandson.
Right. Of course, and we sometimes I think that we make a mistake by we think that psychokinesis and survival are mutually exclusive. I mean, if we're theorizing that you survive your physical death or your consciousness survives, there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to do PK without a body.
Well, what's interesting, you know, the energies involved here, let's call them, well, okay, the energies that we know of in the universe are all exothermic, meaning when they do work, they produce heat. Whatever
right.
this force of nature is, and it isn't one we know of, when it does work, it does not produce heat, which means it's endothermic. Nothing we know of in the universe is like that except this. We're missing something very important here, in the sense that if we learn what this is, and it can do quite demonstrable physical work, this could change the way we live on the planet. We can, our nervous system can access this force and put it to use. And it wouldn't it be odd if this could change the way we live? I mean, imagine a power source, call it zero point,
right.
that could run the planet without cables, without wires, without power lines, without gasoline, without fuel. I'm convinced such is possible. And we're looking at the beginning of that now.
And I hope you get the patent for it.
Well, right now, the patent office will not patent anything that has any paranormal link.
Yeah, well, you can't call it paranormal.
Yeah, or if it's perpetual motion. But
right.
I think it's doable. I mean, there's research that's been done in sort of similar areas, but no one's followed up on it, and those who try to are stopped because it's a fundamental radical shift of the way we live
right.
and the way we operate. So, you know, I think what it's going to come down to in the end is our concept of life and death and birth and death and life are going to have to change.
Mm-hmm.
That consciousness may precede our physical body and continue once we're gone, and we just inhabit this shell we call a body.
Right.
But right now we can't make that determination because we don't even know what that is.
Exactly. Nobody knows what consciousness is.
Right.
We are talking with Dr. Barry Taff. His book is called Aliens Above, Ghosts Below, Explorations of the Unknown. His website is barrytaff.net, BARRYTAFF.net. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will hear more about the unseen world from our guest, Dr. Barry Taff. So stay with us.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Suzanne Goode, an award-winning certified professional and master photographer, is the owner of Goode Photography, a studio located in Long Island, New York for 25 years. She has devoted herself to creating timeless portraits and virtual paintings that capture the essence of a person in one single moment, forever lasting. She can use your photograph of a loved one or pet and transform it into a watercolor or canvas painting. You can view her work and email on her website, www.goodphotography.com.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present. Available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Barry Taft. This show is sponsored by Hugs from Heaven and can be found on the web at www.hugsfromheaven.com. That's spelled H-U-G-Z. And if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we will receive a donation, and when you find what you are shopping for, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a moment when you shop to show us that you care. And I just want to mention and thank everybody who has been shopping through the holidays on Amazon and iGive. We've reached a new height on Amazon. We will go over the top if you take the next 2.5 days left in 2011 to show us that you care by shopping at Amazon.com through the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. So thank you to everybody. And our holidays past raffle winners were drawn on December 23rd. They're all being contacted with instructions for setting up their medium readings. In addition, the first names of the winners are on our website, and thank you all to who participated by buying raffle chances and supporting our work. Watch for the Holidays of the Earth raffle announcements coming soon. Bob?
And we're back with Dr. Barry Taft, the author of Aliens Above, Ghosts Below, Explorations of the Unknown. Barry, when we talk about aliens, it's a subject that a lot of people are may not know very much about. What they know about is what they've read in or movies that they've seen. Do you think that people talk about these alien abductions and visits, do they tend to we don't hear about them because they're fearful about telling other people. They don't want to be labeled. So do you think it's more common than what we know about?
Well, I mean, once you get rid of the people who are just seeking attention, who are or emotionally disturbed or suffer from some kind of abuse when they were young and they've manifested it in this paranoid belief, there is a core of information out there that's extraordinary. And what's odd, the first attempt by our government, the Air Force, to study UFOs concluded, Project Sign, that UFOs were indeed real and they very likely were not from the Earth. Well, the head of the Air Force, General Hoyt Vandenberg, didn't like that. So he went another study done. It was called Project Grudge. They reached the same conclusion. He didn't like it either. Then yeah. came Project Blue Book, which was basically a public relations disinformation mechanism. Any case that had security implications wasn't given the Blue Book. Their job was to dissuade the public from believing in such. There's enough data on in ufology, good, solid data, ground visual, air radar, going back more than 60 years, to convince a hardened skeptic if they read the data. And it's amazing the lengths to which our own government and the intelligence community has gone to lie to the public to keep them uninformed. The best books you could read on this are called UFOs in a National Security State by Richard M. Dolan. There's volumes 1 and 2, and people will be amazed the lengths to which our government, over many decades of time, have gone to lie to the public to make them disbelieve in this. And what's amazing is that the reasons I discuss this at length in the third section of my book, in the second section that deals with UFOs and the paranormal, it appears that we may have an inconceivable past in an unimaginable future. And by that I mean there's a substantial amount of evidence strongly indicating that we, meaning the human race, may have been engineered by another race of beings about 2 million years ago. There were hominids here, crude proto-humans. They were not human. Something came and intervened, and the result were different forms of more evolved hominids, resulting in Homo sapiens. The evidence is there. It's in my book. I go through bit, boom, 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 and the sources it came from. There have been a number of crashes well beyond Roswell where bodies were recovered and the autopsies are discussed in part in the book, and the sources are all referenced. If we can't get along on Earth between black and white, red, yellow, and brown, throwing gray in the mix probably wouldn't help. And the world in general works on the concept of domestic tranquility. That is, there is calm, there's quietude, everyone lives under the concept of order and justice. If that is shattered in the sense that we realize that we were made, but it wasn't by God, and religion might be a fallacy because we're worshiping something we didn't understand, that would give us an inconceivable past. And if we already have people running into holy wars, screaming the name of their God, because they don't like people who don't believe as they do, this would make matters worse. And the bottom line is simple. Domestic tranquility fails. Come April 15th, we stop writing our checks because government is not God anymore. And if they've known things and they haven't divulged it to us, there's disinformation and misinformation, that the government just wants money. They want to exist. Yeah. Chaos and disorder is not domestic tranquility. Hmm. I think that if the can of worms was opened, in the near term, it would be disastrous. In the long term, it would be beneficial. We're not being invaded. We're not being taken over. We're not being replaced. Why they're here, why they have been here, why they're abducting people and maybe doing hybridization research, we don't know. I discussed this in the book. But we've had cases that began as poltergeists and evolved into abductions. These are in the book. Other cases that began as alleged abductions and evolved into poltergeist cases. And I, for one, this happened to me directly to a girl I met in early 1977 on a case, poltergeist case, and I met her and I just went numb. I was so awed by her beauty. Another one of my Joan clones, you know. And we started dating and everything was great. And then this is in chapter 10 of my book. and I had these dreams. The dreams kept saying that in July 22nd, the relationship ends. Didn't know why. Didn't know. I'm not going to tell her. Then she thinks that the cheap way out of the relationship. So I didn't know why. I said, well, I'm not going to do anything. Everything's fine. I was with her in her condo in the Hollywood Hills. Now, she believed in the paranormal, which is why I met her, but her interest in UFOs was zero. She was garbage. Don't bother me. It's garbage. Trash. So July 22nd, we wake up, and she's under the covers. Make a long story short, she's crying and sobbing, why didn't I help her? With what? When they took her, when the room lit up, I go, what? And she won't come out. She's wrapped up in the blankets, won't come out. And she said, the room lit up. She was picked up out of bed by the shooter knows by what. She was in a round metal room. There were these little men around her. They looked like snakes. They had reptilian skin, big black eyes angled up, no nose, no outer ears, a slit for a mouth. They weren't talking, but she could hear them, and they were cutting and probing and doing horrible things to her that were hurting. And I went to her, and she remembers, she's still under the covers. I said, do you know anything about UFO abductions? And she goes, what? What's a UFO abduction? And then she said that they restrained her at her neck, her wrists, her ankles, and her abdomen. She was held down by some mechanism. So finally, about 90 minutes later, I coax her out from under the covers. She's bleeding from her nose, bleeding from her eye, bleeding from her ear, bleeding from her mouth, bleeding from her rectum, bleeding from her uterus, and she wasn't menstruating. Her hair had been cut, little melon baller scoops in her back, and around her ankles, her abdomen, her neck, and her wrists were black and blue with constriction marks, bruises. So, I don't know. Nothing happened to me. We learned subsequent to this event, people in that area said, did you see that strange thing hovering over here the other night? We went, what thing? It killed power for a couple hours, or reddish-orange something, and the power went out in that area of the Hollywood Hills, and we didn't know about it, and the power did go out for a couple hours. Now, she claims to have been re-abducted, which is very common. Can't prove or disprove it, but had this event not occurred, whatever it was, we likely would have been married within less than a year. So this is something that affected me quite profoundly, and it's on my website called a life-changing paranormal event.
Yeah.
And she became a mental vegetable. Just complete space cadet. Bad pun, but she did. So, can I prove it? No. Disprove it? No. But the evidence of the power going out, people seeing that large glowing something hovering over the hills. The case.
Yeah,
go ahead.
When I hear some of the accounts, I'm reminded of some of the experiences from the near-death experience, you know, where people, a lot of skeptics will use the argument, I mean, besides the normal arguments of oxygen deprivation and hallucinations from a dying brain, you know, they'll say, well,
right.
It's out in the literature. Everybody knows what is, you know, a near-death experience, and you go through the tunnel and you see a light. So therefore, you know, when somebody has some sort of a vision, they interpret it that way. I would imagine they try to do the same thing with when people describe, you know, aliens and UFOs. You know,
except that near-death experiences occur when you are near death and you're unconscious for the most.
Right.
A lot of these encounters with UFOs occur when people are awake. What I described with my ex-girlfriend, she wasn't awake, and because I shared the bed with her. One researcher, Michael Persinger, he's a neurobiologist up in Canada.
Yeah.
You know, he studied the God Helmet, where they stimulate your brain with electromagnetic fields, and they can simulate the sense of abduction and you're being watched. But, see, that's faulty logic. Just because we can simulate something doesn't mean the real event didn't occur.
Exactly.
That's like saying, well, because we can make a movie about going to the moon, the Apollo program never went.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could go, there's more data on ufology, good, hard data from really good people that's been published. You could go into court and demonstrate that the Earth's been visited for thousands of years by someone. Even Alexander the Great, in his trips of conquest many thousands of years ago, had run-ins what he called flying burning shields that would harass him and his men. No one was flying 3,000 years ago, as far as we know.
Yeah.
So what were they running? What were they seeing? They were hallucinating? Yeah, all his men. This stuff goes into religion. And Portugal, Fatima, 1917. it's been a movie made, early 50s, The Miracle of Our Lady of Fatima. They see these three children saw what they thought was the Virgin Mary descend, and two of them saw, the other heard buzzing in their head, and they describe communication, and finally the whole village goes, and a lot of them see something, and they actually photographed what they thought was the sun descending to the earth. They thought the world was ending. The photographs looked like a UFO in descent. And the ground got dry, people were healed, but not everyone had the same experience. Two of the children who were closest to these apparitions on more than one occasion, they died relatively soon afterwards of, they thought, was consumption. They didn't know what it was. Decades later, they exhumed the body. The cause of death was determined to be radiation poisoning. There was no radiation on the earth at that time that would kill people.
No.
So what killed them?
It certainly is intriguing when you see the as the archaeologists uncover some of the sunken cities and the pyramids and the caves, and you see these depictions of these what looks like alien craft. You know, it's
and rock on glyphs, petroglyphs, yeah. And caves, yeah. Of vehicles that clearly look like UFOs. I mean, even a World War One. During much of the trench warfare, on more than one occasion, something was seen descending. Again, the Virgin Mary, and both sides freaked out. You know, the Allies, the Axis, they all freaked out. They dropped their weapons and ran away like children. And then eventually they came back and killed each other some more. It happened again. They dropped their weapons, ran away, and then, of course, it didn't occur again. So it's almost like something or someone is playing with us. Let's see what these little furry beings do if we show them an image they think is related to their god.
Right.
And remember, it's all a matter of perspective. It's all very relative. Thousands of years ago, this was theological. Even hundreds of years ago, now we look at it as ufological. It's the same thing. Wouldn't surprise me. We might be surprised in the end. Like I said, the center section of my book goes into this at length. Now, it's not that I don't believe in God, because I do believe in God. But I believe that what we think God is nowhere near what it is. Mm-hmm. I think we, meaning the human race, was engineered by another race of beings, if not more than one. God knows why, literally. They may know something about our future we don't. We want to take a form of human DNA and mix it with another DNA to populate another star system. We don't know.
Yeah.
So there's all these unanswered questions, and that's what the book's designed to do, is when you're done with the book, you know a lot more than you did when you first picked it up.
Absolutely, and that, you know, it's mixed in with what I found the most enjoyable, in addition to the information, was some of the personal stories and the personal investigations. I mean, such as one time you were on an investigation, and I guess you would term it a ghost cat. I mean, you're sitting on a couch, you feel the weight of a cat jumping on your lap, purring.
I feel the paws, the claws. Yeah. I hear it, but I can't see it.
Right, and you you had owned cats, so you knew what it was like, right?
Right?
Mm-hmm. Then the cat jumps off on the couch.
The couch depresses.
I mean, at the time, personal experience is a lot different than research and hearing, anecdotal stories. You know, when you experience these things, I mean, for instance, when that was happening with you with a cat, what was going through your mind? I mean,
stunned. I wasn't frightened. I was just amazed. My God, this is in 1968.
Yeah.
I was just, oh, my God. And I reached out and nothing. It couldn't affect me, but I could not touch it, whatever it was. So what does it suggest? Well, that some types of the cat's consciousness was around and affecting the environment, maybe.
Yeah.
And I've had cats that have passed away. They didn't come back to me, but that doesn't mean they don't. I mean, we don't know. And, it's hard. The only thing we do know is that in the end, there's a force of nature out there we don't understand that does not involve time or space. It doesn't involve energy we know of. And if we learn what this is, it can dramatically and positively affect our future to where we could live, I think, at a level like Star Trek. Mm. It would give us technology that would make life a utopia. The question is, are we evolved enough to handle that type of power? And probably the answer is no, which is why we don't have it yet.
We have been talking with Dr. Barry Taff. His book we've been talking about is called Aliens Above, Ghosts Below, Explorations of the Unknown. The website is barrytaff.net, BarryTaff.net. In addition to learning more about, you know, the book and some of Barry's background, it's filled with articles that Dr. Taff has written on many of the subjects that we've been talking about today. There is a link on our website to the book, should you choose to order it. We appreciate you doing that through Amazon. And Barry, we really appreciate you being with us. I hope
my pleasure, Robert.
And take care, and happy New Year to you.
Same to you. Same to you.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thanks
for having me on.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. The universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steppi, Wendy Lippo, Kathy Ward, and Francis Mastracco. And now, our prayer for the Gulf. Now let's send energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelican fishes, shellfishes, plankton, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And that was written by Masuro Emoto back on May 9th, 2010, when we had the Gulf tragedy. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.